too, in this same vein of uplifting ADS CFT to cosmology. In particular, I will want to spend some time talking about a particular worked example where we have a microscopic construction of this this de Sitter de Sitter correspondence. This is work done by, this is part of a constellation of work done with Shi Dong, Eva Silverstein, Shinji Matsura, and Gonzalo Toriba. I'll spend most time talking about a particular paper with almost the same title as my talk, Micromanaging de Sitter Holography. I called the talk Micromanaging and Accounting in de Sitter Holography. We just finished up a project on inflation, so the economy was still very much on our minds. Other useful references for this will be the work on duals to theories in the landscape by Joe and Eva back in 2009, and also the original references on de Sitter de Sitter by Alicia Hayek, Karch, Silverstein, and Tong. I'd like to talk about a particular microscopic brain construction of the de Sitter de Sitter correspondence, which was described at the macroscopic level there. There's a number of reasons why we might want to have a microscopic construction of this, particularly to partly because it's a useful exercise in perturbative constructions of de Sitter de Sitter, and has some useful techniques just for making these, but also it's an opportunity to try to get information about the dual field, about the field theory side of this semi-holographic correspondence. And there's a lot that we don't know, but these brain constructions can give us some interesting clues. The other thing, there's a number of conceptual questions we might hope to answer with some understanding of the microscopics, particularly metastability and decay of de Sitter, growth of the number of degrees of freedom as we go from, we generalize either from de Sitter to an inflating solution or to FRW. I'll have more to say, though, about the microscopic origin of the Gibbons-Hawking entropy. In particular, a nice thing that comes out of this brain construction is you can write down a you can write down the macroscopic parameters of the gravity solution in terms of microscopic parameters in the brain construction, and this gives you a nice accounting of the Gibbons-Hawking entropy that may give us clues as to the field theory. So, without further ado, the de Sitter de Sitter correspondence was already Eva already described that very nicely in her talk. The idea is to write part of de Sitter as a pair of as a slicing in by de Sitter in one lower dimension. This can either be done, if this is the Penrose diagram for de Sitter, you can do this in multiple ways. You can either slice the region shown here by slices of global de Sitter in one lower dimension, or you can restrict your attention to a single static patch and then slice it by static patches in one lower dimension. And just as a warning, this is a little bit—it's a little bit misleading to write this as a Penrose diagram, since the slicing doesn't actually respect the d minus two dimensional spherical symmetry. But that should give you the idea. So then, the sharp statement of the de Sitter, writing the de Sitter metric this way gives us a correspondence between gravity on de Sitter in d dimensions with two field theories, each corresponding to the two warp throats living on de Sitter in d minus one dimensions. They are cut off at a scale of 1 over the de Sitter radius, and they are coupled to one another and to gravity. The theory is thermal, with the temperature equal to the Gibbons Hawking temperature. And also, if we are restricting our attention to a single static patch, since the static patch is of order, has a size of order, the inverse cutoff anyway, we're essentially looking at a single lattice point of the theory. So if you want to think of this as a quantum mechanical system, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's certainly hard to Well, you get the fact that you're dealing with de Sitter in d dimensions by starting on the gravity side and writing de Sitter in that particular metric, and it's so far been much easier to go from the gravity side to the boundary side rather than vice versa. It's hard to see from the field theory side exactly. Especially in the case where you're dealing with only a single static patch, because the cutoff scale is of order the size of the space-time, that means the lattice is of the effective field theory is of order the size of the space-time. So it may be more helpful to think of this as a quantum mechanical system rather than as a continuum field theory. Yeah. Yeah, though there are degrees of freedom with lower energy, like these hydrodynamic loads. Good. It's a quantum mechanical system that retains memory somehow that it comes from a theory living in de Sitter space. And there's a lot we don't know about how that operates. But in particular, it would obey the Hamiltonian constraint for de Sitter space. I don't know how to write this thing in terms of a Lagrangian. But it's a good question. Well, the brain construction gives us a definition of this thing, but writing down the low energy theory from a Lagrangian, I'm not sure how to do that. So that's about all I wanted to say about the macroscopic level of the de-Sitter-de-Sitter correspondence. It's only a semi-holographic correspondence in the sense that gravity does not fully decouple on the boundary side, although it is weak. And you could in principle consider iterating this to lower and lower dimensions until you end up with in 0 plus 1 or 1 plus 1 dimensions. In that case, maybe you'll pick up a more and more complicated matter sector with each step. Maybe, though, there's a final definition in terms of a matrix theory. This seems doable in principle, but could be very complicated in practice. So just as de Sitter, in a sense, has a right to this semi-holographic description because of the warp throat, because of the warp throat construction, we also can look for a brain construction of these this Randall-Sundrum model. So for the microscopic construction, we'll deal with a particular worked example in three dimensions. So this is a compactification to de Sitter in three dimensions across an orbifolded S3 cross T4. And we're building up from the familiar D1, D5 system, which in the near horizon limit gives 80 S3 cross S3 cross T4. And using this business of the zero mode effective potential, we can see how to uplift that. I'll just review that very quickly for the simpler case of D1, D5. You have your ingredients here are when you're considering the zero mode effective potential for ADS3, there's the curvature of S3. There's also fluxes from the color brains, specifically an F3 flux wrapping the S3 and an F7 flux wrapping the S3 cross T4. So when you write that in three-dimensional Einstein frame, I'm going to do this example out in some detail because I don't think I will have time to do our full worked example out in detail. This is the conversion factor to Einstein frame, volume, and then curvature. Plus the flux terms. And if I rewrite this in terms of this variable eta, then that becomes cube of the Planck mass times minus eta to the fourth plus eta to the sixth times the flux term. Here's the F7 flux and here's the F3. And then this is enough to give you the macroscopic parameters, specifically the size of the S3 and the size of the T4, in terms of the microscopic input parameters, the number of brains that went in. This is the same idea as we use in our more complicated brain construction, though the effective potential is more involved. And in general, there are many such constructions of this, but the overall structure appears again and again. In ADS, you have this nice two-term structure, which is a fight between positive curvature energy, which contributes negatively to the potential energy, and flux. In the de Sitter case, so in ADS, speaking very a little bit telescopically, you can get away with having only two kinds of terms. In De Sitter, you need three kinds of terms to do the uplifting. You need to have negative curvature instead of positive. You need to have some intermediate source of negative energy, which in our case will be contributed by O-planes. It can also be done by certain topological terms, but we use O-planes. And finally, the flux. And as Eva already explained, this three-term structure, having this three-term structure to the potential very generally gives you a brain construction that is compact instead of non-compact. So you need both color brains and color antibrains to do it. And you, without even doing the full machinery of the brain construction of the effective potential and the brain construction for our particular worked example, you can see that you're going to get the De Sitter De Sitter correspondence coming out of this kind of uplifting. So I want to tell you more about the specific ingredients that are involved. I love having so many boards. Yes, yes. But you also get these, you get a brain construction that has this nice two-throat structure. So it lands you on this, it's a little bit like the way the near horizon limit for D-brains lands you on the Poincaré slicing version of the ADS-CFT correspondence. This particular kind of construction seems to land us nicely on De Sitter De Sitter. The way you see both throats is by writing out the Einstein equation for the. You imagine the color brains probing a cone, probing the transverse dimensions, which are a cone over, say, S5 or S3 cross S4, and writing the Einstein equation for the radius of that cone, you get sort of the radial analog of the Friedman equation in cosmology. Not as far as we know as we understand the field theory. There are from the ingredients that go into this uplifting, you can get hints of what's in the field theory, and somehow those ingredients conspire to make the field theory correspond to a De Sitter solution. But there's a lot we don't understand. Okay, so in that case, I will not write down our full effective potential, but I will tell you the ingredients that go into it. To uplift, you need three kinds of terms, and you have this ABC type structure. The A term is provided by is the uplifting. Eva mentioned PQ7 brains as being useful for this. These are very generally. These are great because they have tension 1 over G string squared, and they have codimension 2, so they have the right parametrics to compete with curvature. In our case, though, instead of PQ7 brains, we use what are called stringy cosmic 5 brains. These are similar to 7 brains, whereas these can be described in F-theory as a vibration of the axio-dilaton torus over the base space. These are actually involve a vibration of the geometric torus over the base. These were nicely described by Simeon and John McGreevy, also by Brian Green et al. And they're also very useful in Joe and Eva's construction. So you can think of these as these will contribute with similar parametrics as KK5 brains or NS5 brains, but because we have this F-theory type language or this gauge linear sigma model, we can control the back reaction in a very nice way. So these are very important. And then in the B term, we use O-planes, and having an orbifold, making this S3 over ZK instead of just S3, allows us to sort of artificially boost the number of orientifold planes to give them the strength to compete enough. Getting back to, there's a question as to what this, these ingredients are critical for uplifting the dual field theory, and it's interesting to ask these we would expect as, if these were PQ7 brains, they would contribute as magnetic flavors to the dual field theory, and in the case of FC5 brains in three dimensions, it's a vibration of the target space manifold of the sigma model. Also, the O-planes give SP and SO or SO gauge groups instead of SU. Somehow, these ingredients are help conspire to make the field theory correspond to a de Sitter solution and not an ABS solution. Exactly how that is accomplished, though, is something we don't understand in as much detail as we want just yet. Since I'm running out of time, I want to make sure I tell you the punchline. With these ingredients, you can write out a full effective potential, just as we wrote the effective potential in the simpler case here. And without actually writing down what that effective potential is, I'll show you what form it has. We work in three-dimensional Einstein frame. In the A term, we have curvature plus these SC5 brains plus NS5 brains times eta to the fourth, the same eta appearing there, minus orientifolds and also flavor D7 brains, which were useful. We have multiple moduli to stabilize here, so more ingredients were needed. And then finally, the fluxes, F3 and F7. And writing out the full effective potential, we can write, which I will show afterward to anyone who's interested, you can write the macroscopic parameters in terms of the microscopic ones. When the dust clears, you have the size of the radius and the, you have the geometric sizes of the S3 and the torus stabilized in terms of the size of the orbifold, or alternately in terms of the number of brains. You have to stabilize the hop fiber of the S3 separately from the base, but that also works as you'd expect. From this, you can see that for k greater than 1 or for n1 much greater than n5, you can get a solution with small curvature. You can also get weak coupling. And because you have additional structure in this eta to the fourth term, you can tune these things to lie at a small value, so you get a hierarchy between the sizes of the non-compact and the compact dimensions that's also related to these microscopic parameters. With having made this micro to macro dictionary, you can write the Gibbons-Hawking entropy for the static patch in terms of the microscopic parameters in a very suggestive way. As 1 over this hierarchy to the 3/2 power times k, n1, n5. And I'm almost out of time, but I'm also almost done. This k, n1, n5 is very suggestive of a quiver gauge theory. So it looks like the 1-5 strings are dominating the entropy, as they would in the D1, D5 system. And this additional factor can be explained as an enhancement due to the winding modes. Because of this hierarchy, the brain construction is very long and skinny. So if you were to pull out a single brain to look at the Coulomb branch, a 1-5 string stretched from the brain back to the origin can wrap around the three internal dimensions without much of an energy cost as it stretches along. So you get 1 over root epsilon cubed out here. So that is most of what I wanted to tell you. We have this microscopic construction of the de Sitter de Sitter correspondence from brains, and we use it to get a parametric accounting of the entropy. There's a number of places to go from this, and Shi will tell you about a number of them. Specifically, decay, the case where you go beyond the metastable construction to something that decays. Still at the level of the metastable construction, though, we currently have in progress a four-dimensional version of this worked example. There's still some odds and ends to tie up there. And there's also just a lot to understand still about what's going on the field theory side and how the uplifting to de Sitter operates there. So that's all. Well, I don't know how to define the gravitational entropy in the absence. I don't know how to define the gravitational entropy separately from what's in it, because the matter sector that's in this theory will renormalize the Planck constant, renormalize the Newton's constant. Yes, the matter looks like it. The matter seems to be dominating because it's such a huge contribution, and well, this out of what you get out of the de Sitter de Sitter correspondence is this de Sitter theory already with a large matter sector in it. You don't have the de Sitter solution in the absence of matter from the de Sitter de Sitter correspondence. You can define a bound on the total entropy in the space from this from the horizon, but that's the entropy of everything inside, gravitational and matter, and the matter is back reacting on the solution, and it's hard to disentangle the two for that reason. Well, the number of O5 planes, effectively the number of O5 planes is k, because the orbifold sort of boosts the number of. Well, the number of. Well, the strength of the order of the orbifold is, in a sense, the number of O planes you've got. So that microscopic parameter feeds into your micro-macro dictionary here. You don't have to worry about Gauss's law here, because the orientifolds are wrapping a contractible cycle. That's a subtlety of the particular construction here. I don't know if that answers your question. arbitrary large in the sense of numerics, or? Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that makes sense.
Blackboard calls.
Yes.
Everything goes, or
everything.